Welcome to another exciting, intriguing, and riveting episode of That So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, my co-host, Sherry Coolidge.
Little known fact, Cincinnati is in our emails. Like on our email string. It's like, what?
We're Coolidge Squared here in the booth right out of the gate of That So Cincinnati. We bring in Alexander Coolidge, our business reporter, our Kroger reporter. We're jumping right to it today, Sherry. Sherry, why is Alex here?
Welcome, Alex.
Hello.
Usually, I know you. Usually Hello. I only see him for 1 second when we leave Sounds the house in the morning right. And when I get home at, what do you think, 9 o'clock?
Right, yeah.
Yes, the two Coolidge's bylines that you see, they are related. They are husband and wife team here at the Inquirer, kicking butt on big business, Alex on Kroger and Procter & Gamble and like 30 other things, Sherry on City Hall and all kinds of watchdog stuff. And sometimes you write about Neil Armstrong and entertainment things.
Every once in a while, Alex and I have a co-byline, and I do save them. I save them for Jack, and, you know, to have. And I think someday he might be like, what is this thing? A newspaper? But I have them saved for him.
Their son, Jack. How old is he now? 12?
He's 11.
11.
And sassy as get out the last couple of weeks. I don't know.
I know.
Take after me.
You and I were on the phone the other night talking about some story, and Jack weighs in and says he wants some doggone Lucky Charms. And I loved it.
And then you suggested that he should have them, and I haven't heard the end of it, but whichever. I was going to say no.
Perfect segue, because when he did ask for those, Dad just so happened to be at Kroger, and so you texted Dad to pick up Lucky Charms at Kroger, and that's why we have Dad here, otherwise known as Alex Coolidge, to talk about the new downtown Kroger coming up. Alex?
Wait, you wanted Lucky Charms too?
I did. I told. Did you not get the message there that
no.
I said order get me some from Alex as well?
Murphy's Law. Whenever I get texted at the supermarket, I get the text when I'm pulling into the garage, and it's, oh, yeah, that would have been nice.
Alex does all the grocery shopping, and I think he just calls it research.
Yes.
All right. So Alex has. Hi-ho. You know, the downtown Hi. Kroger is opening on Wednesday.
Yes.
A long time coming. Very exciting.
I think
ribbon cutting and the whole
shebang.
Yeah.
Is the word you're searching for. Yeah. That's happening Wednesday, 9 in the morning for everybody. And it'll be a great fanfare. And, you know, it's a little... If you're not downtown, you know, you might be sort of a little flummoxed as to why we make such a big deal of having a store about half the size of a suburban combo store, you know, opening up in downtown. But it's been 50 years since Kroger had a downtown supermarket. The last one was closed in December of 1969, so, you know,
wow.
Right after Neil Armstrong, you know, kind of came back to Earth and did the ticker tape parades and all that sort of thing. And you know, there's been clamoring for years about, you know, we need a supermarket. And then beyond that, it's also sort of a chapter in the ongoing narrative of downtown, sort of the resurgence. There's been quite a little restaurant boom, quite a few condos built downtown. But one thing that's always been sort of missing has been like, when the heck are we going to get a grocery store down here? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's not really – well, what this signals is that the growth and development downtown that we've been watching since the riots, you know, the rebound from the riots is the this sort of signals a maturing point, I guess, for downtown a little bit. There's the business community, Kroger specifically, feels like there's enough critical mass to the residents and business clients that they can actually roll the dice and actually invest several million dollars in opening one of these things and actually have it be a success. So that's kind of what it means.
So I know already, but I want you to tell everyone. I know you've already been there. Mm-hmm. It's opening on the day the podcast posts online. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about it?
What's it actually like to be in there? The layout, because it's because there's a limited amount of geographical space, and because it's on two floors, and because they're sort of trying to cater to sort of a slightly different, maybe a slightly different mix of customers. The deli section, the bakery section, all that stuff is all that's prepackaged. So there's no, you don't go to a counter and say, give me, you know, half a pound of shaved roast beef. Mm-hmm. Everything's pre-cut. There's a heavy amount of prepackaged or ready to grab and go, ready to cook types of foods.
Yeah.
There. And then upstairs, they have they're doing something. It's kind of new in sort of developmental, circles. The whole food hall concept, which is a very fancy term for a nice food court. Basically, it's a bunch of. It's really kind of neat. Something Kroger does when they're trying to bring in local like local food and. Fair, that type of thing. They actually tend to recruit sort of food truck type vendors to come in and have a freestanding sort of location, and that's kind of what they've done here. They've brought some folks who have previously done that, and then they're giving them basically a common eating area with seating for about 200 plus people, and then they've got their new. Cafe, bistro and bar sort of concept, the Kitchen 1883 setup upstairs on the second floor. And they're going to have a full-blown bar with a balcony overlooking downtown.
And, of course, they're talking about a pedestrian, like, courtyard-type thing outside of Kroger, right? Where does that stand?
That's advancing. They're basically... the city's approved some more money to sort of more formally basically do blueprints of something like that. That's along Court Street between, I want to say Race and Elm, basically. They're going to narrow this. They're looking at narrowing the street. They're going to keep it two-way traffic, but they're going to radically expand both sides of the sidewalk, that sort of thing.
Take away some of the parking, but not all of it?
Yeah, they're going to take away a chunk of that parking, but then the theory is, well, they've got these new parking garages, that sort of thing, going into place. And so they're... they're thinking that'll sort of help make up for some of the loss there.
One more question for you, Alex.
Yeah.
One more practical question. Will things be more expensive at this Kroger, a loaf of bread, a gallon of milk, than they are at, say...
I was glancing at some items. I didn't see much difference at all.
So, like, if you know, for people who are running back to the suburbs, but mm-hmm. you don't want to stop at your neighborhood Kroger, you could grab
my kids'
milk
Lunchables were the same price.
Okay.
Milk didn't look outrageous to me. I didn't look through every section. That's an excellent question. Hey, maybe that's something I should be doing tomorrow at the grand opening, price checking a basket. Of things. Thanks.
Well, we'll be
great idea.
We'll be looking forward. We can find you at Alex Coolidge on Twitter. We'll find all your coverage at Cincinnati.com. We're looking forward to all that, Alex. Great work on this.
Thank you.
Keep up the great work on the comings and goings of Kroger. And, you know, you cover mm-hmm. the consumer side and the business side of this company better than anyone. And just love what you're doing on that. So thanks
for
stopping in.
And I don't say this to all guests, but love you.
Okay. Love you too, hon.
Let's now jump to our special guest today. And how do I say this? I'm just really looking forward to this, Sherry. Talking to Hamilton County Commissioner, just announced a couple weeks ago that he will not be running again in 2020 as he battles cancer. And so let's bring in Todd Portune. All right, guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and what an honor it is, our guest this week, none other than Hamilton County Commissioner Todd Portune. Todd, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's great to have you. It's great to see you. You look great. And thanks for – I know we're only audio. We're not video, but I can tell our audience that you're looking good and have a lot of energy. And
thank you.
Great to see you.
Well, I got great news this morning, actually. So I'm feeling great. I had I'll disclose it. I mean, everybody knows everything about me pretty much. But I've been having an awful lot of pain in my right leg here lately. And one of the things that we really wanted to rule out was there was another blood clot because I've had problems with that. So he had that test done this morning. Clean, clear, good blood flow, all that stuff going on. So the good news is no clot. You know, the bad news is I'm still in pain. I don't know what's causing it. But we'll get to that. We'll get around to that.
Okay.
As long as one of those really bad things is not present, I'm happy about that. If it's just a little musculoskeletal problem that we have to deal with, then we'll deal with that. We'll figure it out. So a good day to be – this is actually my first That's So Cincy podcast.
Yes,
as well. So I'm the one who should be honored to be here, not that you're honored to interview me. I mean, Jason, Sherry, Lord knows you've taken enough shots at me over the years that
Jason.
Is that what it is, Sherry?
Yeah.
You're laying it all on Jason now?
Definitely.
Well, but Todd, you know what? It's okay, because as I said a couple weeks ago, I think the media is under all manner of unfair criticism, and you've got a job to do, and people don't realize how tough it is to try to get a story straight and get all the angles and cover it in a span of less than 24 hours. You guys are constantly under deadlines. You're covering current news, and you can't spend a week to work on something to get it. I mean, there are those occasions when you can, but that's not typically the case. And so you're constantly running to meet deadlines and doing the best you can. And a free society has to have an investigative media.
I appreciate that so much.
Really does.
When you said it the other week, it meant a lot to me then too.
Well,
it's so true though, because, and you know, there's times I felt it may have been unfair, but you know what, on balance, the media here has been exceedingly fair. And I appreciate it. I really do.
The one thing that you know where I stand, I only speak for myself, and I think I know where you stand with Sherry, because there's a tremendous respect there between the two of you. And, you know, I've said this on radio shows in my columns that you're a true public servant. You're a committed public servant. You're in it for the right reasons. And you're one of the most resilient people I've ever met personally or professionally. And You are Democrat, Republican, whatever, politics, all that aside, you're the kind of person that the people should be proud of to have elected into office because of what you've been through and how you've fought through it and the work that you've done. And, you know, you and I joke about those 3 a.m. emails, but that's you. You're doing that for the greater good of the people, and I want to say that before we even get started here. Thank you for, as a citizen of Hamilton County, thank you for all you've done, and we'll look forward to you continuing on as commissioner.
Thank you. Yeah, there's still a lot of work to do.
All right, so we're not going to get choked up this time.
Nope.
I hope not.
Yeah, no, we're not. We're not.
We talked a little bit about, you know, what might happen in the future since you're not running for election again last week, and it's hard to think about that, honestly. But I want you now, I would take this podcast, it would be like the 4-hour podcast, and like my editors don't think that's a good idea. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, but I want to
break it into parts, the mini series.
Done. All right. Okay. Burl, Carl, are you listening? I love this idea. Yeah. So I want to jump in right now with some of the highlights of your career. We do have a lot of current things we want to talk about, but
sure.
I want to talk, your highlights are memorable. And so can you take us through those?
Oh, gosh. Well, that's such an impossible question to answer. It really is. I said this 2 weeks ago, and I really mean it. There's not a single issue I've worked on that really stands out from others in my mind, because every issue is important to the people that you're working on behalf of. And it can just be a single person, but that's the most important thing that's going on in their life. It may be the only encounter that they have face to face with somebody that they may have voted for or didn't vote for, but whose help they're asking. And those are really special moments for me, too. A lot of those individual one-on-ones where things stand out and people remember. And you know, a lot of them have to do, I am sad to say, with MSD. And you know, people need help. Their basements have backed up. They got raw sewage in their first floor. They've got issues like that. And I made it a priority when I got elected this last term to clean up the mess at MSD. And we thought we had a deal with the city.
Yeah.
August 14th, 2017. We announced it. We all stood there at MSD's offices.
I remember.
And said, you know, and I'm standing next to John and Cranley, that is the mayor of the city. And I was the president of the board then, and we're articulating this deal. And within a month, it felt like the wheels had already started to fall off it. And we weren't getting from our view, we weren't getting the cooperation that we needed and the full weight of the city elected leadership to implement the deal that we had just announced. The city, you talk to them, they will say they saw it differently. And they have their arguments. But the long and the short of it is here we had worked so hard. I tried dating back to the days of Mark Mallory and Milt Dehoney, the city manager, and when Mark was mayor, to try to effect an early revocation of the 68 agreement, the 50-year agreement with the city. But there was no interest in the city in looking at that at all. You know, things were working okay, but the intent behind it was to say, look, let's not wait until it's a time crunch and there are all these pressures now to get something done.
Oh, we did.
And because of that, you've got people that might be acting in ways you wish they weren't or saying things that you wish they didn't and so on and so on. But we couldn't get any traction in 07, 08. And so then there it is. 2015, 16, 17, and everything that I was hoping we would avoid came to pass. But we slogged through it. There is no solution. But, Sherry and Jason, the good news from my perspective is this. The city sued the county, saying we were doing things that we had no authority to do. We won at the trial level. The city appealed that to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, federal court. And the Sixth Circuit just ruled, I forget the exact date, but it was very recent, in the county's favor on all points.
I saw that.
That the county is the owner. The city is the agent to the county. And for the audience, what that means is the city has to do what we tell them to do. We decide the policy, and the city then has to act because under the agreement, which remains in place by federal court extension, the city, as our agent, manages things. They run the day-to-day, but that day-to-day has to be done in a way that implements the policy decisions of the county.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we could talk about MSD is just such a giant issue. We could talk about that all day.
Well, we could, and I know you don't want to, but let me just put the clothes on it real quick, Sherry. We've got a proposal to resolve things, and we believe with the Sixth Circuit decision now, we've appealed to Judge Barrett to now implement the solution that we have the right to propose and implement, and we're hoping that he's going to enforce it and we can move away from MSD. The city's pension system, by the way, will be protected and preserved under that. The majority of the employees will still be city employees, so they don't give up any of their seniority or rights or any of that stuff in the process. But it is a solution that solves the problem.
Does it require any action by the
None
state?
Not at all. Okay. It requires Judge Barrett's decision.
Okay.
I think when we talk about your legacy, and certainly you can't, maybe number one on that list is how you got into office, that you came in fighting the stadium deal.
Into this office, yes.
Into this office, yeah, correct, yes. Correct.
And when I had 8 years at city council before that.
First, I mean, we think we have to talk about the most famous moment, turning back the clock.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Right? Yes, that's so, right. I mean, that's all part of it, right?
That is a memorable moment, Sherry. I'll give you that. No doubt about it. There's an iconic photo somewhere in the files and archives of the Cincinnati Inquirer.
I will find and tweet it.
Well, I hope you will. Thank you. But that related to all of the initial discussions between the city and the county and the Bengals and what to do right and what to do wrong. And it preceded a lot of the stuff that really then, Jason, caused the issues that I ran on for county commission then in the year 2000. You know, I always felt we have these major sports teams here. They need to play in venues that are competitive with the league and all of that stuff. Didn't want to lose them or anything. But at the end of the day, we also represented the taxpayers. And the most important areas where that comes into play was in the construction of the stadiums and whether they would be brought in on time and within budget. And you've seen in my office,
I've got these posters
on time, under budget. And that was with the Great American Ballpark, which was built under my watch as a county commissioner, as opposed to Paul Brown Stadium, that was significantly over budget under my the then incumbent, who I defeated in the year 2000. But the photograph that you're talking about occurred several years before that.
97, right?
I think there was a deadline. Right.
There was a deadline.
Land sale deadlines. Now what?
Correct.
I've never heard of such a thing.
I didn't want this to be a part of the current issue. I wanted to ask you more about that.
But it was a fun photo. Okay?
But yeah, Todd turned back. We were going to miss that midnight deadline. And as much as I don't know, people want to stay at City Hall till midnight. Todd, you got it done. You turned back the clock 10 minutes, right?
I turned back up an hour.
Take us through that moment. Did someone say to you, Todd, no, or you just got up and went and changed?
I just got up and went. We're all waiting on the county to do what it was doing here at the county offices. And we didn't know what was holding it up, but we had the whole council there. So right. Roxanne Qualls was mayor.
Yep.
And Dwight Tillery, Bobby Stern.
A full council meeting.
It was a full council. Yep. Tyrone Yates, Charlie Winburn, Phil Heimlich. All these names out of the past, you know, who were on board there. And I can't remember who else was actually in the room when that happened.
Nick Beer on council then?
I think Nick was off council at that point. Okay. So that's when Phil and Charlie were on board together.
Okay.
But, you know, there used to be a media bullpen because council was all set up differently. We didn't have the dais and the ropes that separated the grand poobahs from the citizens they represented.
Now there's metal detectors and locked doors. It's a different time.
We had sort of, you know, our desks were on the floor with the people, and I sat, you know, because of the setup with my back to the person sitting behind me in the audience was closer to me, could lean forward and touch me and ask me, and quite often did during a council meeting. Things were different. They were so much different then. I'm not saying that we were better or worse, but they were different. I think it was a lot more collegial, and I don't think we had the same sense of separation from the people we represented or from the media that I think you get today. And part of that is that physical barrier. But they were there. The media bullpen was up in the front of the room, and we're all just waiting. And I was thinking, well, you know, what the heck? Let's lighten this situation up a little bit. And I went up in the balcony. I didn't think anybody even saw what I was doing. I was going to have to actually call their attention to what I had done. But the next thing I know, I'm leaning over from the balcony to where the clock is to unhook it from the wall and turn the minute hand back, the hour hand back, and I look over to the bullpen, and every camera is like on me, and it's like, well, okay, I don't have to call their attention to what I'm doing. They've got it.
It's the same clock.
I think it is the same clock. Yeah. So I put it back on the wall, and I said something like, I didn't think that we were going to make the Eastern daylight or the Eastern Standard midnight time, and we're so close to the start of Central time. I think we're going to extend it. Yeah, some words that were not memorable at all. I don't even remember exactly what I said, but we set the clock back by an hour. I shouldn't say we. I set the clock back by an hour, that was a part of the lore around all of this stuff, I guess. But
you've got the
picture.
Those deals did get done. And you came. I mean, also, just real quick, just a brief passing. Mm-hmm. I think about something that you did while you were on council a lot when I'm parking downtown. You implemented the 10-minute parking for free. And I don't think all the meters have that now, but some of them still do. And anytime the 10 minutes pops up for me, I think of you.
Thank you.
And it's like, because I'm always running in, grab a document, run out, or that kind of thing.
I'm going to tell you, there's a great class action lawsuit out there waiting to be filed by somebody on this. So, because what happens is those meters that still say, first of all, thank you, Sherry, for bringing that up. It was one of those little things that people don't necessarily think of when they think of me. You did. Thank you for that. But they used to be everywhere, and gradually there are fewer and fewer and fewer of those green meters. And we extended to every meter mm-hmm. downtown that you could get your first 10 minutes free. And even the parking was so much cheaper back then. We didn't want to raise the price of parking. We did everything we could to lower the price of parking. Our competition wasn't the other parking lots downtown. It was the malls that were being built around downtown Cincinnati. And we didn't want people to decide, well, I want to shop in Kenwood, or I want to shop at Northgate or Eastgate or anything like that, because it cost me $10 to park downtown for a full day. We wanted to be competitive. So you could park for 3 hours for a dollar. You could get your first 10 minutes at the meter free. A parking ticket for extending your time was $8. I think it's 40 or more now today. I mean, all this stuff. I think you've gotten some, Jason.
It sounds like experience.
You don't think it's 50? But I think it's 50.
It's 45.
Yeah. So the whole point
after 10 days.
The whole point was to cheapen it, and that was one. But the class action suit is this, Sherry. It says first 10 minutes free. All right? So if you park and you flip the handle like you're told how to do, you get 10 minutes. If you plop a quarter in to get more than 10 minutes, it reverts back to zero. And you only get the amount of money the amount of time that you have paid for. You don't get your first 10 minutes free. And it doesn't say that. But the city it advertises it on the meter. It does all that on their website. I mean, I've followed this. I've called at various times members of the council, and I said, you guys need to change this, because somebody's going to sue you for like $1 million on a class action lawsuit, and that's probably cheap when you add up the number of meters and the number of years this has gone on. Every meter, whatever the cost of 10 minutes is, multiplied by however many years it's been, that's the value of this. And it's a pretty lay down, no questions asked kind of a deal. So I've had no luck. I've tried to warn them of the error of their ways around this, so that everybody really does get their first 10 minutes free.
I feel like they listened to this. So,
but maybe they'll listen to this and someone will finally correct the error.
You thinking about your career and almost two decades here at the county commissioner.
Yeah.
And I know you flirted around with kicking around the idea of maybe running for Congress. Did you ever think about going back to City Hall and running for mayor?
Never. Never.
If you weren't doing this,
I'm going to say something that will surprise a lot of people, and it might insult some people. But tell you the truth, I would consider that a step down. Yeah,
I think there are a lot of people that would see it that way.
Yeah, I'd never had any desire or interest in doing that. One, it just in the way I see it, but two, you can affect in a positive way so many other things, so many people from a county level than you can from a city level. And so I grew to really love this job a lot.
You ran for governor too.
I did, as far as I could take it.
Yeah.
The party. I spent time on the campaign trail
with
Todd.
Did. Yes, you did.
We went to Lima.
Ohio.
Where did we go? We went somewhere very famous.
Well, it was a restaurant in Lima that we went to.
That was a 2014.
2014 election.
Like the Price Hill Chili of Lima.
That's right. Yeah. I can't remember the name of it, regrettably, but there's a wonderful lady there, Jewel Pennington, who... I'll just say this because if you get a hold of her, she'll be glad to hear that I referenced her.
This is quintessential you. We don't remember the name of the restaurant, but you do remember the name of the person.
Yeah, yeah. And Jill's just a wonderful, wonderful citizen. And we still talk. She called me up just the other day. She's got my birthday plugged into her calendar, you know, and I call Joel up and talk about things. And so she's a terrific, terrific lady. And that's, you know, that's the essence of it all, Jason, Sherry, is people. You know, this job, you got to love people, all people. And you got to really love serving people. And, you know, there's no shortage of scripture, no matter what your faith is, that's all about the first being last. And if you, you know, want to consider yourself at the top of the heap, what you really have to do is serve everyone, no matter what level, you know, they might, well, no matter what station they might find themselves in life. And only in that way are your works and your faith coming together at the same time. So I try to live what I believe, and it really is to the people. And that's why I reference to you. You know, so many of my memorable moments are really just about the really small things from a news perspective, but they're huge things in individual people's lives.
In your 8 years on council and, you know, going on two decades here, on the Board of Commissioners.
Yes.
How would you characterize the city-county relationship right now?
I'd say it's about as bad now as I've seen it in my career.
That's what I'm hearing.
I really would. And that's distressing. And to tell you the truth, it's why I've decided that, you know, I'm not stepping down immediately, along with my announcement that I'm not running in next year's election. There's still a lot of work that has to be done on issues where the city and the county have to come together. And I'm hopeful that, and I say this, not that I ever feel like I allowed that electoral consequences got in the way of doing the right thing. All right. I mean, that's how I feel it. Others would probably say, well, you're still a politician. You still got to raise money. You still belong to a party. You still are this, that, and the other thing. And therefore, you know, how can you not let electoral considerations get in the way? But I don't have any electoral considerations at this point. And I'm hoping that with the collaboration and the goodwill that has really come to the surface so much over the last 2 weeks, that I can be a voice, at least, that might be able to rise above the din of all of that, or the cacophony of the arguing that's going on, and hopefully that will help us get together on these critical issues. You know, finishing the funding for the Western Hills Viaduct, The whole banks and the completion of the banks development. I know you want to get to that. We haven't talked about that yet. The preserving the renegotiated Bengals lease that we did last year that has got to maintain MSD and finalizing that. You know, one area where we have great cooperation is in a lot of the public health stuff. World Health Coalition, infant mortality reduction around Cradle Cincinnati,
where we've made so many gains
at that.
Why is it so bad? Why is the relationship here, so bad?
Between the city and the county?
Yeah.
Competition, personalities.
You're all Democrats, so people would say you're all Democrats.
We are, but you know what? Regrettably, with that abundance of opportunity has now within our party, I'm afraid, engendered some of the worst of a competitive nature.
Are you frustrated with the mayor?
John and I have been fighting since since he was appointed to my seat, which I think, as everybody knows, you know, John wasn't one of the six names that I submitted to the party in the year 2000 to get my seat on council. So we have an interesting relationship. I love John Cranley. I really do. You know, I love Dina. I you know, love everything about their family and what they're about. We have worked together on a lot of issues and gotten them done.
The Sword of War being one of them.
Well, we did, although, truth be told, we suspended negotiations for 6 months because of a fight that John Cranley and I had.
Some things never change.
That's right. But here's the moral of that story. We got back together again, and we did work it out, and it got done. All right? And so we have a very good – we'll still butt heads, but not the same way and not without any of the really personal acrimony that I think is attendant to some of the other fights that take place between the mayor and other elected officials, whether they're city council members or county commissioners. I mean, we just have so much shared experience together over decades that it's good. It's good. And I hope to draw upon that here as I continue to serve in my interaction with John.
So that takes us nicely into the music venue and the Hilltop deal and the Bengals reworked lease. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen here?
Well, let's start with the lease. Because
it's where the conversation of this is headed.
Yeah, I mean, that has such an effect on everything. When I ran in 2000, I ran on renegotiating the Bengals lease and inserting controls so that we could get the finances under control at Paul Brown Stadium. And that ultimately led to, among other things, I filed a taxpayer suit against the Bengals personally in the year 2003. To try to get, you know, everything resolved that way, because I wasn't having too much luck in getting support from the county commission to advance that directly. But ultimately, the county commission took over that suit as well, and we carried that on. Phil Heimlich, by the way, and Tom Nyer were instrumental in all of that. You know, Tom before Phil, and then Phil at the at the end. So that was a great episode of bipartisan cooperation to try to right what were perceived wrongs in the financial arrangement between the county and the Bengals. But even then, I never imagined that we would be as successful as we were in our lease modifications renegotiation that just concluded in November of 2018. The benefits to taxpayers are enormous. You begin with the $30 million of out-year payments, where basically, how I've characterized it, the taxpayers are paying the Bengals $30 million over 9 years to play at Paul Brown Stadium. That's gone. Then you have the issue of all of the level two enhancements at Paul Brown Stadium. Well, those enhancements have been capped at a level of $40 million. when if you look at every NFL stadium that's been built or renovated since the year 2000, on average, you're talking about $300 million or more than taxpayers have paid in building and maintaining Paul Brown Stadium during that that same time period. And as we look to the future, that $300 million average is, it gives you some idea of what the Bengals could demand and be, you know, and rightfully demand under a strict enforcement of the four corners of the agreement, you know, without maybe looking at other extenuating circumstances and things. I don't want to prejudice any defenses there might be down the road in saying this, but the fact is, you know, that's the average of where they would probably start with those kind of enhancements and demanding them under the lease. We've capped that at 40. Then you get to the development guidelines. The Bengals can veto whatever goes down there if the building's too high or if it's too close or it is this or that or whatever. And that's something that the mayor talks about repeatedly and has repeatedly when we've talked about the full development of the banks, of the music venue and other things. And to that end, those are gone now. The Bengals have agreed to a new construct whereby we work with design planners, urban land planners from ULI, the Urban Land Institute, to help us design the balance, you know, the planning for the banks from now to completion. And the Bengals are a part of that. We're a part of that. The city's part of that. Joint Bank Steering Committee is a part of that, but we've got this outside force, ULI, that's part of that, works around a consensus plan. Nobody has a veto on anything. So that's all been given up, and that's now going to help to expedite development. It's going to allow us to complete the banks. It's going to eliminate delays and the costs attendant to delay and so on and so on. You know, the full value of that, while we've not costed it out directly over 8 years, that will certainly run into the hundreds of millions of dollars in terms of being able to get things done when they need to be gotten done, how they need to be gotten done. And that's just the, you know, the three main elements of this renegotiation. So preserving that renegotiated lease and relocating Hilltop is essential to that being preserved. Those are the kinds of things that are at risk of being lost if we are unable to successfully resolve the Hilltop situation.
Do you feel like there's a deadline to do that?
I think we're getting close. If we are to open, depends on what establishes the deadline. So if you take the position that the deadline is opening the music venue at the time that we need to open the music venue at, and having alternative surface parking that the Bengals need for the loss of all the surface parking that they're going to lose with the construction of the music venue, which I believe, you know, we need. It should already be up and running and events there, but for interference from the city over the last 2 years. That should not be a debate at all. Having said that, though, you know, if we want to get everything done and replace that parking on time, I think we're looking at sometime in November as probably being the latest before there start to become financial consequences to this or our ability to open on time begins to get compromised. So if you look at those two things as being deadline setters, then that's your deadline. If you look at this from the standpoint of, well, we'll incur some penalties because we want to get it right, then the deadline is not that soon. But the fact of the matter is we don't want to incur any penalties. We don't want to cost taxpayers any money. So I'm using that. Me personally, I'm using that as a deadline. Plus, it's also within the time period that I plan to still be serving. So I want to get this done before I'm no longer a county commissioner.
Do you? So the mayor has he has talked about those development controls, but he has been making the point recently, the idea that this kind of kicks the renegotiations like down the road, just kicks the can, like there's still going to have to be a lot of improvements to the stadium. Do you think that we should be having the conversation right now about whether we want the Bengals to stay or go?
Well, if you want to run a poll that asks that question, you go right ahead.
Burrow love.
I want the Bengals to stay. You know, I don't like the fact that they're 0-3. Nobody does. But I much prefer a Cincy Metro region that has them than one that does not. And that does nothing to affect my love for UC Bearcats football. And because I like college football better generally, personally. And I played college football, albeit, you know, not at the upper level. But I love the college game so much more. But that personal feeling aside, I like us having the Bengals more than I like us not having the Bengals. I like us having FC than not having FC.
But the Cincinnati Bengals are always going to want theirs. And at some point, we got to say no more. Mm-hmm. Either you're going to stay or you're going to go, but we're not giving you anything else.
You bet. And that'll come up in 2026, you know, when – but I will tell you that our relationship with the Bengals is so much better today than it was even just 3 years ago. And they have been, I think, a little more forthcoming as to what their real desires are and needs are. And we have a much better working relationship around what those are and our ability to accomplish them. And so I feel much better about the kinds of negotiations that will occur. They won't include me, but the kinds of negotiations and the environment in which they will take place in 2026.
Do you think they want to stay?
Me. Mike certainly says that they do. Earlier, what year was that? I want to say this year, but I don't want to sound senile here and say a year and it wasn't the right
year.
It really does.
When was the last time you talked to him?
To Mike? Gosh.
Because you guys went a long time without talking, right?
Well, we did, but then we have had more frequent conversations ever since the GE deal. And that was really a watershed moment in our relationship. Mine personally and the county's as well with the Bengals was the GE deal. And I called Mike up right after the day after that deal was voted on and approved by the county. And they were in the middle of draft discussions and all sorts of things. And Mike's assistant, who answered the phone, when I told her who I was, and that I wanted to talk to Mike, she says, please wait. I want you to wait. I'll be right back to you. And 5 minutes go by. She gets back on the phone. She's out of breath. You know, I think she had literally run to where they were having their discussions to tell Mike that I was on the phone. And he took the call, and we talked for about 15 minutes. It was a great conversation. I'm not going to discuss, you know, sure, what our confidant, what our private conversation was, but it was a great conversation. And I've had a much better relationship with the team since then. We've had much better negotiating sessions with the Bengals since then. Believe it or not, Bob Bettinghaus and I talk frequently since then. I talk to Bob more than I talk to Mike.
Who you beat to get in this office.
Who I beat to get into this office. And
can you ever imagine this, like back then, like to where we are right now?
No,
like the days of the lawsuit and
Sherry,
everything?
The reality is we went, well, good gosh, until Greg Hartman was in his last year as county commissioner before we talked from when I first got elected.
That was 2016, right?
It was.
2015.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess, you know, you could say time heals all wounds. It wasn't time, though. It was a definite change in negotiating posture. It's a much better foundational relationship that we have with the Bengals today than we've had in any of my tenure here. And we're not giving away the farm or anything. You just look at what we accomplished in this last lease renegotiation. And we want to preserve that. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer benefit being lost if we're not able to resolve this. And, you know, if the city does not say, okay, you're right, your relationship, your lease with the Bengals, that's your problem. And so we're going to not interfere with what you've negotiated anymore, just as we at the county have not interfered at all with their relationship with FC Cincinnati and their lease with them. You know, there might be aspects of that that we don't like. We could scrutinize whether the taxpayers were well represented in that or not. I'm sure we could pick holes in any one of a number of things. We haven't done it. In fact, we voted unanimously to allow the city to use a certain sum of money, which we could have withheld from the city having access to, but we didn't, because it was essential to them concluding their deal with FC, and we said, that's your deal. We're not going to get in the way of it, and we're not going to restrict. We're not going to veto this. If you feel you need it, we're not going to prevent you from having access to it. And I just wish the city would reciprocate with us around the Bengals. I think that's appropriate. I think that's fair.
All right. You know, I knew going into this, I was going to need 4 hours.
But well, this is why you're going to go to Carl and
ask for the miniseries.
Ask for the miniseries.
It's a county commission meeting time now, though, and there's a lot of big topics. And so, we record on Tuesday, and this will post on Wednesday.
Sure.
So you're going to go into something that we'll have stories on tomorrow. I feel like it's like a crystal ball.
I think that's probably true.
Todd, wish you
all
the best. Yep. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's good to see you.
Good to see both of you, and I hope that we will have more than just this one session.
Definitely.
Terrific.
Agreed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Thanks so much to Todd Portune. Just always enjoy talking with him, and certainly looking forward to many more conversations with him. But definitely when he leaves the commission, we'll certainly miss him. And you're always going to get a thorough explanation on every topic with Todd. And there's times when you're in a hurry in our business, we need a quote in a hurry. And we've joked about how that's never a quick conversation with Todd, but golly, you think about it now and you just certainly appreciate it. And that's why I wanted to get him on the pod, because it's a forum where we can have a longer conversation. And he was great.
His office is like a shrine to the, you know, we did it in person over there in his office, just so much memorabilia and a shrine to the biggest things that have happened in the past 20 years. It was amazing to look around that room. I kind of wanted to stay a little bit like a museum.
And he just has such passion for this county and this city and every little nook and cranny of Hamilton County. Like, he just lives it and loves it. And there are very few people who are certainly that committed to elected office, and just appreciate everything that he's done. I know he's got a full slate there of things he wants to accomplish before he steps down. So we'll look forward to keeping tabs on him, and seeing there's certainly some big decisions coming up with the hotel and the banks and what else is going on? MSD and SORTA tax is coming out down the pike, and there's a lot of things on the plate right now, and the icon tax and what they're going to do with that.
I'm officially dubbing it Development Palooza. You know, people have asked me a lot about what's going on at council and everything, and I keep referring to, like, what's the next big decision? They are upon us with the idea that we're going to make some big decisions about the riverfront and now the convention hotel. Then they talked about the convention center. The arena has now been mentioned in passing. We are headed for all of these things that Todd talked about, like, at the beginning of this term, of things he wanted to get done. And it'll be interesting to see how it all unfolds. And, of course, Kroger's opening.
That's a perfect setup for my opportunity to brag about the coverage you, Sherry, and Scott Wortman on the county side are doing on these major city-county projects. You guys are all over it. I'm weaving in and out on the political side of things. And stick with us, folks. Cincinnati.com. Check us out. I'm continuing just so excited about more and more people are subscribing. It really has given me hope for the future of local journalism. The folks who are really buying into subscribing in the digital age, and it's exciting. And so, if you don't have your subscription yet, no one's doing this content. I know I keep saying that on this podcast so much, but there's no other way to say it. No one else is doing what we're doing on the projects you love and care about with your money. We know so much from the feedback that we get that Cincinnatians, greater Cincinnatians, are so into what's going on in their front and backyard with local politics. And Cincinnati is unique in that way. There are a lot of other cities, they're not into their local politics and local government the way you guys are here in Cincinnati. So thank you so much. We're all over it. And check out our latest subscription deals. Let's have a little fun before we jump out. Sherry, you went to Oktoberfest. Is there anything that gets more Cincinnati? And I think I say that every time we mention something about Cincinnati. Is there anything more Cincinnati than that?
You know, it's expanded so much. And it was, I went after work. I mean, there's nothing better than Oktoberfest right outside the door of your work.
That's great. kudos to the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. They're just doing, they do a tremendous job there. And I know Rich Wahlberg over and Jackie Rowe at Game Day Communications did just such a great job of promoting it in the chamber. And it's great that it's at the banks, and it just seems to be very thriving.
Well, this year expanded hours. And I mean, if Carl's listening, I didn't go as soon as it opened on Friday. but if he's not listening, I did go as soon as it opened on Friday to get lunch, air quotes. It was right down there. You know, it was just, it's on two different blocks and several blocks long. And so, you know, you could just really hit all the highlights. The beer booths and all the food is amazing. But I think the biggest takeaway from this year is that these expanded earlier hours on Friday were very popular. I was not the only working person who took a cruise through there, which was really nice. I had to go out of town this weekend, and that was really a good way. I was able to enjoy it. I saw tons of people. It was a beautiful day out, of course. Yeah. It's always a good weekend.
Middle of July here.
Yes, at that. And so I thought that was great. I hope they keep that. The mayor declared, you know, a half day of vacation at City Hall and really urged a lot of companies to do that. And it seemed like that happened.
Yes. Burl, I messaged Burl because I believe Burl introduced those of you who have been with us since day one. We talked about the God's Mac and Tickle Pickle. Burl's a big Oktoberfest patronizer. And so I texted him and he's like, no. It turns out apparently that's a Taste of Cincinnati thing. But he was telling me about some Geta Slammer thing that he got. And I don't even, it was Geta and all kinds of other. What's a Geta Slammer? Pretzel Geta Slammer. That's right. You were sitting there when Burl was talking. A pretzel Geta Slammer is like a pretzel bun smashed with Geta and all kinds of other things. I expect him to say Skyline Chili and Gold Star Chili and La Rosa's Pizza and Grater's Ice Cream, but he didn't go that far.
I did see a lot more food combos. Like every year you get more things like that where they're trying to combine everything and kind of like fair food, right? Like these super, you know, special things for Oktoberfest. But I stuck to the classics, sauerkraut balls, a pretzel, and yeah, I had a cream puff.
Oh, that's right, because Burl was going to get a cream puff and he got sidetracked by this thing. He told me that. So, you know what? I've got to give an update on something. Someone messaged me a couple days ago and asked me, and it's so funny, I hadn't thought of this in a while. So whoever you were that messaged me, you asked for an update on my duct taped faucet. It is still duct taped. Over the weekend, my exciting thing over the weekend that I did was I power washed our porch and our driveway. Yes, that's how boring I am.
Alex already left. He needs to do that. Darn it.
So I used my faucet.
This is a to-do list for
my
him.
My duct tape faucet, and it's still going. And Phil, do you still have the duct tape So, yes, the duct tape's still going. Thank you for your concern for my faucet.
I feel like it's still going to end badly. Like, it's good. Okay, we're good. We're good. I feel like something's not going to... It's not going to be great.
It's been holding up since the winter, I think. So, anyway. All right, we got to get out of this. We have had a long episode today. Thank you for sticking with us to the end. We will be back next week. Big, big name guest next week. So, come back. You know where to find us. Tell your friends. Apple Podcasts. We're on iHeartRadio Podcast now, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And, of course, you can find us on Cincinnati.com. We post this to our website every Wednesday, mid-morning at lunch to lunchtime area. So thanks for all your feedback. Sherry Coolidge is at Sharon Coolidge on Twitter. I'm at Jay Williams Cincy with a Y on Twitter. For our executive producer, Phil P. Diddy Diddian, we'll not see you, but we'll catch you next week.